Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the sixth canto, first chapter entitled The History of the Life of Ajamil, text number 46. Yateha Deva Pravaras Tri Vidyam Upalabhyate Puteshu Guna Vaichitriyat Tatranya Tranumiyate. Yateha Deva Pravaras Trivedyam Upalabhyate Bhuteshu Guna Vaitrityat Tatanya Tranumiyate. Yateha Deva Pravaras Trivedyam Upalabhyate Puteshu Guna Vaitrityat Tatanya Tranumiyate. Marajis? Yata, just as Iha, in this life, Deva Pravara, O best of the demigods, Trivedyam, three kinds of attributes, Upalabhyate, are achieved, Puteshu, among all living entities, Guna Vaitrityat, because of the diversity of the contamination of the three modes of nature, Tata, similarly, Anyatra, in other places, Anumiyate, it is inferred. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O best of the demigods, we can see three different varieties of life which are due to the contamination of the three modes of nature. Living entities are thus known as peaceful, restless, and foolish, as happy, unhappy, or in between, or as religious, irreligious, and semi-religious. We can deduce that in the next life, these three kinds of material nature will similarly act. Purport. The actions and reactions of the three modes of material nature are visible in this life. For example, some people are very happy, some are very distressed, and some are in mixed happiness and distress. This is the result of past association with the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Since these varieties are visible in this life, we may assume that the living entities, according to their association with the different modes of material nature, will be happy, distressed, or between the two in the next life also. Therefore, the best policy is to disassociate oneself from these modes of material nature and be always transcendental to their contamination. This is possible only when one fully engages in devotional service of the Lord. As Krishna confirms in the Bhagavad Gita 14:26, Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatitaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down under any circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the spiritual platform. Unless one is fully absorbed in the service of the Lord, one is subject to the contamination of the three modes of material nature and must therefore suffer from distress or mixed happiness and distress. Om Gyani Timirandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitangena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namaham Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prasad Bhutale Srimate Palatnanda Swami Tumane Namaham Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prasad Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tumane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Vicharani Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paschatya Deshacharine. So, first of all, I'd like to thank everyone for being here and allowing me an opportunity to render some service. It's always very nice. So in this verse and the previous verse that we heard from yesterday, it's explaining about the three modes of material nature and how they affect our experience in this material world based upon our association with them. There's the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance, as Prabhupada is pointing out, or as Krishna's, the Yamadutas are pointing out in this verse, that these three modes of material nature, each one has its own symptoms. So in the mode of goodness, people are generally peaceful, happy, religious, and they don't suffer very much in this lifetime. And then because of associating with that mode, then they'll attain a body corresponding to that mode in their next life also. Whereas the mode of passion brings restlessness, it brings mixed happiness and distress. Then the mode of semi-religiousness. Then the mode of ignorance, people are very foolish, they're unhappy, and they're irreligious. Of course, it's explained that never at any time is one particular mode dominant over the other modes. Completely dominant, where it's only just one mode acting. It's always a mix. And just one of the mix of those three, just in that competition for dominance, is currently dominating the primary experience that we're enjoying or suffering. And Prabhupada made an important statement in the purport. He said that it's due to the association with these three modes of material nature that we experience like this. Now, this is an extremely important concept to understand. Association. We've heard about association many times before, usually in the connection with devotees and wanting to avoid association with non-devotees. But this is also true with the three modes of material nature. one can associate with the modes of nature just as one can associate with another person. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 13:22, Purushak prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sadasadyoni janmashu. The living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. So this is very important to understand, because it's much more subtle than physical association. This is association with our mind, what we're mentally identifying with and mentally contemplating. And so that's why this is such a much more difficult thing to recognize, how we're associating. Because oftentimes, especially when we're in the modes of nature, it's very easy to fool ourselves, to make believe that we're on a more advanced platform than we actually are. Oh, well, you know, because oftentimes in the mode of passion, people tend to get very puffed up. Or in the mode of ignorance, they're just completely unaware of what's going on. And so in these deluded states of consciousness, one can easily be taking on more and more of these qualities of these modes of nature, but out of false ego, be thinking that they're actually advancing very nicely in spiritual consciousness. And then they're encountering so many difficulties in spiritual life and wondering why the whole world is against them. So it's very important to have internal honesty, to be honest with yourself. What's actually going on within your heart, within your mind? When we have this internal honesty, then we can, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, then we can actually understand where we're situated, exactly what's going on, and where we need to go from here, how we can progress further. And it's described also that as we change bodies, then we bring with us our consciousness exactly where it was when we left our body, into our next body. Both in this verse in the Bhagavatam, it's also alluded to in this verse from the Gita. Just as an aroma, just as the air will carry an aroma from one place to another, similarly our consciousness will also carry this particular development in these different modes from one body to another. So we'll get a body according to what modes of nature we're identifying with. As it says in that verse from the Gita, thus he meets good and evil among various species. You know, so it's explained in the Vedas, and Prabhupada has explained it many times also, that those in the mode of goodness, often they usually go up to the heavenly planets. Those in the mode of passion, they usually stay within this earthly planet, the Martyalokas. And those in the mode of ignorance, they go down to the hellish life, or into the animal species. And usually the hellish life precedes the animal species. The hellish life is to condition the consciousness to become accustomed to being in an animal body. So, with all this difficulty, and with being completely absorbed in these modes of material nature, having it completely surrounding us on all sides, how is it that we can actually get out of this? Because it seems almost overwhelming for a drowning man to escape from the ocean with seemingly no support around. It can seem like a very futile or hopeless situation. But Krishna gives the answer to that in this purport for text 46. And he also mentions in the Gita, Prabhupada actually quotes it in the purport here. mam triyo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatitaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. So Krishna is saying that for one who is fully engaged in devotional service, he does not fall down under any circumstances, and he transcends the three modes of material nature, and thus he comes to the spiritual platform. So this is what's really required. We have to fully engage in Krishna consciousness. If we're not fully engaged with Krishna consciousness, then our devotion is mixed. And although mixed devotion will bring us further spiritual advancement, it won't fully extricate us from this material struggle. Because only with full engagement, unalloyed devotional service, only then will we actually re-enter Vaikuntha, Goloka Vrindavan. While we're still mixed, while it's still bhakti, whether it's karma mishra bhakti, jnana mishra bhakti, or yoga mishra bhakti, all these different things, they taint. They put other flavors into the flavor of devotion. Because sometimes, even though we have a desire to engage in devotional service, but at the same time, we still have very strong desires to engage in these other activities. Like one devotee was telling me the other day that he has a very strong desire to go back to school. But he also admitted to me that his desire for going back to school wasn't related to Krishna consciousness. It's just because he wanted to go back to school. So that's karma mishra bhakti. You know, because his first desire was to go back to school for his own purposes. But then he was thinking, well, you know, I really want to engage in Krishna's service, so let me somehow or another twist this into to be able to use this somehow in Krishna's service. You know, somehow maybe, you know, do something for my Guru Maharaj on the campus or something. So the second thought was how to offer the results to Krishna. So this is karma mishra bhakti. The main desire is still karmic activities, but because the desire for devotional service is there, then you're somehow trying to apply that to your spiritual life. So it's based upon the motivation. Similarly, in jnana mishra bhakti, people, they're very addicted to mentally speculating. And so they try to mentally speculate about the nature of Krishna, which is nice. You know, they're speculating about Krishna. That's where the bhakti part comes in. But still, it's jnana. They're speculating. They're not depending upon the mercy of the previous acharyas and letting the transcendental knowledge flow down to them through the chain of disciplic succession. Rather, they want, through their own endeavor, through their own speculation and churning of mental gears, they want to somehow come, based upon their own mental perfection, to understand Krishna. But that's not pure devotional service, because it's still materially motivated. So it's also mentioned that when Arjuna asks Krishna in the Gita, he asks Krishna, so what happens to those yogis who fall down, to those aspiring on this path of Krishna consciousness, what happens to them? And because Arjuna, he was a little bit concerned. He was thinking, well, you know, if I fully give up all of my activities for this purpose, for this path of Krishna consciousness, then what will happen to me? Will I be bereft? Will I just be left out in the cold? And it's a very important question, because this is something that affects all of us. All of us, we very subtly have this fear. We have this fear deep, deep down within our heart that if I surrender, then my needs won't be met. And so Krishna responds, he says that for those who don't make it to the ultimate goal, to my abode, then they'll come back in this material world and they'll have a second chance. They'll either be born in a very wealthy family, or they'll be born in a family of Brahmins or a family of devotees. And thus they'll have a much better opportunity for picking up where they left off in their previous life. Although, as we know from looking at practical examples, this is also extremely dangerous. I mean, naturally, it's not as dangerous as being born into a family of ordinary karmis. That's obviously the most dangerous. But even being born in a very pious family or a very wealthy family, that's also very dangerous. Because the tendency, if you're born into a wealthy family, the tendency is to want to enjoy that wealth. And when one is enjoying wealth, it's very easy to become distracted from what the ultimate goal of life is. That's why it's also described that it's extremely difficult, virtually impossible, to come to Krishna consciousness as a demigod in the heavenly planets. They are devotees, yes, but they're sakama devotees. They're devotees with material desires. And because of those material desires and because of the facility that they have available to them, it makes it virtually impossible to attain kevala bhakti, pure devotional service. And thus, when their term for being a demigod expires, they have to come back down to this material, to this Martyaloka, to this earthly planet, to take birth as a human again. And then even for those who are born in pious families, that's a little bit more safe than being born in a wealthy family. Like, for instance, our wonderful Shastrakrit Prabhu, he was born into a very pious family. His mother performed many years of austerities before she had him. And now look what a nice devotee he is. You know, so it's much easier if we're born in a pious family. However, even being born in a devotee family, oftentimes that can come with so much difficulty. We can practically see in our own society how many of devotee children actually take to Krishna consciousness. It's not that overwhelming. In fact, that's actually a cause for concern, you know, because it makes you wonder, well, what if I have to take birth in a devotee family? What are my chances? Because oftentimes when we're born in a devotee family, we're born with very, very pious credit. We're born with a lot of facility for enjoyment. You know, we're usually happy, we're born with great talent, as we can see many of the Gurukulis, they're excellent singers, excellent musicians, very artistic, very talented in so many different ways, and this comes from their piety. However, when we're born with such talents, it's very easy to be sidetracked, as we can see. You know, they want to get out there, enjoy the material world, see what it's all about, enjoy these talents, enjoy these abilities. And so it's very rare for the Gurukulis to actually take initiation. Although, honestly speaking, it is more common for a Gurukuli to take initiation than it is for a Karmi, if we're just talking straight numbers. Because there's not so many Gurukulis, but there's a heck of a lot more Karmis out there. So percentage-wise, even that is a better situation than being born as a regular karmi like I was. So we can see the difficulty of mixing our devotion with these different modes of material nature by associating with these modes of material nature and their concomitant material desires, and how it really causes a lot of difficulty in our life, a lot of difficulty in this path of devotional service. So that's why we really have to come to the point of understanding that Krishna will satisfy my desires, that Krishna will satisfy my needs. That's why one very, very nice name of Krishna is Govinda. Govinda means he who pleases the cows and the senses. So oftentimes we have difficulty in Krishna consciousness surrendering and taking seriously this process of Krishna consciousness, because deep down, like I mentioned earlier, there's this fear that my needs, the needs of my senses, won't be met. But by the very definition of his name, Govinda, he meets the needs of our senses. He pleases our senses. It's actually very nice how Krishna got the name of Govinda after Indra had embarrassed himself by trying to kill all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Then he realized that, well, actually I made a terrible offense. This is actually Krishna. I just didn't realize it. And so he was terribly frightened, and so he approached Lord Brahma, "What should I do?" And Lord Brahma said, "Well, you approach through Surabhi, because the cows are extremely dear to Krishna, and Surabhi is the king of all the cows, the presiding deity of Goloka, Kowloka." And so Indra, he brings Surabhi before Krishna, and Surabhi offers these wonderful, very beautiful prayers to Krishna, and then tells Krishna, "Krishna, you are actually Indra. This imposter over here, he isn't my Indra because he doesn't protect me. But you are my Indra because you ultimately protect me. This guy over here, he was trying to kill all of my relatives. So he's not the real Indra." And so then Surabhi gave Krishna an abhishek with all the milk. And then he gave Krishna the new name of Govinda. Or she, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was thinking that. She gave Krishna the new name of Govinda, because Govinda means he who gives pleasure to the cows and also to the senses. So this is very significant, because Surabhi, she wasn't feeling protected by Indra. And Indra is supposed to protect all the inhabitants of the entire universe. He's supposed to ensure that Dharma prevails throughout the universe. That's why Indra is always fighting with the asuras, with the demons. Because the demons are competing with the demigods to try to spread irreligiosity and demonic behavior throughout all the planetary systems. And so Surabhi was saying that you, Krishna, actually, you're the one who protects me. You're the one who satisfies me. You're the one who fulfills me. It's not through any of these other people. It's not through any of these materialistic endeavors or concepts. And so consequently, Surabhi was able to surrender to Krishna. So we should also take note on this, and we should do similarly. We should realize that, no, I won't be left out in the cold. No, my needs, it's not that my needs won't be met. Everything that I need will be satisfied by Krishna. And consequently, we should fully dedicate ourselves to Krishna's service. We shouldn't hold back anymore. We shouldn't hold back, have this reservation. Well, if I fully surrender, then I'll just be left out in the cold. No, that's not what happens. I remember one devotee was mentioning to me that very thing. He was saying that, you know, I was very impressed with Krishna consciousness, and I really liked this guru and that guru, and one guru even asked me, to take initiation from him, and I wanted to, but at the same time, I didn't want to. And he explained because he felt that if he would have surrendered to his spiritual master, taken initiation, then his spiritual master would have told him something that he didn't want to do. He would have told him to, you know, give up your job and move in the temple or something like that. And he was very fearful of the situation, so he wasn't able to surrender. He wasn't realizing that Krishna will protect me in all circumstances. In all circumstances, Krishna will arrange for my necessities of life. He was thinking, only I can provide for my necessities of life. But then over the course of time, you know, gradually he did take initiation, and he was very happy with that. And to his surprise, his spiritual master didn't ask him to give up his job and move in the temple. So that was a so he was seeing how when he took the step, all those misconceptions, they were vanished. They disappeared. Because when we step towards Krishna, when we give up our false concepts and come closer to Krishna, then we can see on a practical basis actually how Krishna is satisfying all of our needs and desires. So it's about time. If there's any comments or questions. Yes, Amala Bhakti Prabhu. I think it's coming. Just now coming? Hang on. You're next. Amala Bhakti is going to ask first.
Thank you for a very wonderful class, touching on many excellent points about the modes of nature. But you had just mentioned, it's really a minor correction, is that Krishna satisfies all our desires. I would just go to say that he satisfies our useful desires, thus those yeah. which will take us further along the path toward Krishna consciousness. He states very clearly that he will never satisfy a desire which will entangle a person further in the material nature, and which will actually bring him away from Krishna.
Yes, that's true. However, he also gives the intelligence to those foolish people how to turn their back further from him and enter further deeper into the material nature. But for the people who are actually trying to devote their life to him, yes, that's absolutely true. He doesn't satisfy any devotee's desire that will take him further away from Krishna, him or her. Thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. I was at first going to ask, why in the world did we ever come to the material world? And then I thought about it for a couple of minutes, and then I decided it was karma. So if we're here for karma, you know, we have to work extra hard, very, very hard, because karma is something that takes a long, long time.
No, it's not because of karma that we come here. In the spiritual world, there is no karma. Karma only exists in the material world, and we all fell down from the spiritual world. Ultimately, it's not so important why we came here. The example has been given that if you're in a burning house, you don't try to run around and analyze who set fire to the house. An intelligent person will simply try to get out of the house. And then once you're safe and out of the house, then you can try to nitpick and figure out how the house was set on fire. So we're in a similar situation here. We're in a burning house. This is the house of the material world. And so we shouldn't try to waste our time, our valuable time, nitpicking how we came here and what happened. You know, like the example of studying the wallpaper while the roof is burning down. Rather, we should just get out of the house. take to this process of Krishna consciousness seriously, get out of the house, go back to the spiritual world, and then we can hem and haw about how we came to this material world in the first place. Is that okay? Jai. Mukundadat Prabhu.
Thank you. You mentioned that as the air is wafting, say, from a flower to one's nose, we change from one body to another.
Mm-hmm.
You also mentioned that when one goes down into the hellish planets, one has to be conditioned first in order to before he can take an animal body. So it seems like there's not really a very clear connection from one body to another in that case. Just wondering if you can elaborate on that. Do you understand what I'm asking?
Well, it's because of our mentality that we're taken down to the hellish planets. So that's like the air wafting the not so nice aroma of some stool. It's carrying this aroma of stool to another place. And so when we're engaged in many, many impious, or if you will, sinful activities, then our consciousness will carry this wafting foul odor of stool to where we're going next. And the process of the hellish planets going there first, that's a process of it's a process of rectification. It's to help extricate these very deeply rooted material desires, grossly sinful material desires from within our heart, to take these out through experiencing tremendous amounts of pain. And then after that rectification process, then the consciousness is wafted to an animal body, which is also a very hellish state of existence. So compared to the hellish planets, being in an animal body is a very wonderful experience. But, you know, compared to a human body, being in an animal body is a very hellish experience. But being in an animal body, that's a further extension of the system of the hellish planets, in that it's further extricating these different sinful seeds within our heart, but in a nicer way. A not so severe way. And then gradually, as we go through all the animal species and all of our impious karma is burned off, then we can take a human body again. Or in other words, once that foul smell, that foul aroma of stool has worn off from our consciousness, then with a clean consciousness we can come back to being a human again.
It seems like this process of associating with various any mode of material nature, in that process, it seems like we get a lot more than we bargain for.
Yeah, a lot more than we bargain for.
But the same thing actually applies in the mode of goodness, or especially in the mode of devotional service, if you will, because, you know, we get fantastic results from just a little bit of devotional service that don't seem commensurate with the endeavor that we put into it.
Yeah, and that's the difficulty also with the mode of goodness. Because endeavoring on the path of spiritual perfection, of bhakti yoga, it puts one automatically in the mode of goodness. It's not that you have to endeavor to try to become in the mode of goodness. It'll develop spontaneously. And that's a great difficulty because with the mode of goodness comes extraordinary unbounded pride. Feeling that, wow, I'm the great benefactor of all society. By my wonderful beneficence, all these people are benefiting. I'm educating and enlightening all these people. By my endeavor and my wonderful holy nature, all these people are benefiting. That's the nature of the mode of goodness. And it can also translate into the better than thou mentality and all these different things. And it causes a lot of problems. And it prevents us also from going back to the spiritual world. Because being in the mode of goodness, everything feels nice, It's very peaceful. You become very happy. You think, oh, I'm progressing so nicely. But then the subtle shift is there, because then the focus is about me. Like, you may be singing so nicely, you're thinking, wow, the sound of my voice sounds so heavenly. Instead of really deeply meditating upon the holy names. You know, so for devotees in the mode of goodness, that's often a difficulty. You may be doing things so nicely, you know, singing wonderful, beautiful kirtan. But when you're singing this beautiful kirtan, my spiritual master has mentioned, you're just thinking, the sound of my voice sounds so angelic. This is the mode of goodness. You're very pleased and happy with your state of consciousness and what's happening with your circumstances. And you lose sight of the ultimate goal, the ultimate purpose, which is Krishna consciousness. Is that okay, Prabhu? Okay, well, we're running a little bit late right now. So we'll end there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.